Hello and welcome to Monocle on Culture. I'm Robert Pound. Jessica and Camilla Staveley-Taylor are the sisters behind the English indie folk band The Staves. Over the past 15 years, they've performed and recorded alongside their other sister Emily and been lauded by both audiences and critics alike. During this time, they've toured with hallowed indie folk names such as First Aid Kit and Bon Iver. The Staves' songs are sweet and melancholic, often belying the depth of emotion and suppleness of their lyrics. Their music manages to be both gentle and punchy, driven home by those perfect, perfect harmonies. Now, The Staves are back with their fifth LP, All Now. It's their first as a duo after Emily stepped back from the band to focus on raising her children. Produced by John Congleton, who's known for his work with artists such as Sharon Van Etten and Angel Olsen, it's sonically rich, full of moments of euphoria. I was delighted to be joined in the studio by Camilla and Jessica, aka The Staves, to discuss how to work with your siblings, finding the confidence to make bold decisions, and why they can't help but always come back to an early influence, Sister Act. We also heard a wonderful rendition of their new song, I'll Never Leave You Alone. We'll hear some of that now, but stick around to the end to hear the track in full.
I'm the cure, the solution. I'm the reality and the illusion. I'm a kid, I'm a friend, I'm a teacher. I'm the object in the distance, but you'll never reach her. Oh, oh, oh.
That was beautiful. Thank you.
Thank you.
And congratulations on the wonderful All Now.
Yeah.
Out now. It's wonderful stuff. It's a wonderful record. It has got a kind of folky quality. It's got a sort of straight down the line, propulsive, horizon chasing quality at times. At what point in the songwriting process do you decide on vibe, on how many rocky numbers, how many confessional, close to the mic things we're going to hear? Mm. At what point? Does it start out like that, or does it become apparent once you've got some songs in the bank, as it were?
I think that as more songs are written, the treatment for each song becomes quite apparent. But I think you usually know once you begin writing a song, there's either like a really strong vision or there's just a kind of instinct of how it's going to go.
But then in terms of like a group of songs, I think sometimes it ends up just presenting itself.
Yeah.
You know, in terms of like an album.
You go, okay, we need to start a bit fast. Get people's...
Hook
grab
them in.
People. Yeah. What do you use? A lasso?
Yeah.
A sort of small fishing net like a child might use in a paddling pool?
Exactly.
Not a paddling pool, a rock pool.
A rock pool.
Well, All Now felt like it had to be the first song. It's the title track of the album.
Yeah.
And it feels like a new beginning. It feels very much like the beginning of something as you start to listen to the intro to that song.
And it says Happy New Year in it.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
That so should have been everyone's alarm clock on the 1st of January this year.
I know.
Maybe next year.
Maybe next year. Yeah, exactly. Well, once you've taken it out on the road, people will be familiar with that record. People will be familiar with the album as a whole. They'll be singing it back to you.
We'll be there singing it on the top of Big Ben, I imagine.
I imagine we'll be invited to do that.
This year.
Yeah. Okay. Because it's at Buckingham Palace or Big Ben or kind of maybe going round on the London Eye. Just as it strikes midnight, ding, then there's you going, Happy New Year. I won't sing your lyrics back to you in a small room like this. You've done too well to deserve that. But there is a sense of kind of new beginnings with this. Fans of yours will obviously realise that you've been a three-piece, you're now a two-piece. Your sister Emily has gone off and had a baby. Congratulations.
Thanks.
It's a bit late, isn't it? But nonetheless, and congratulations on All Now. So did she contribute to the songwriting? I know I think she contributed to some of the vocals and things. How did that work?
Yeah, yes. She's actually had her second baby. So she is taking a break from the Staves for now. Mm. And on the last record, she wasn't touring. She'd had her first child then. So we're quite used to it being the two of us that are kind of behind the scenes doing the stuff. But it was obviously still sort of worth explaining it to people.
Yeah.
And I think that it's kind of understanding that even though we're sisters, you know, we're bound by blood, it's also okay if people want to do their own thing.
And oh, no, yeah,
sort
exactly.
Of, sort of learning that the Staves can be a kind of flexible entity, and who knows what's going to happen for the next record. We're just kind of taking it step by step. But this was the first record that she wasn't involved in the songwriting process.
Mm.
And that's the first time we've properly done that together, just as
really
a duo.
New for us.
Yeah.
It just being us two. And it was interesting becoming accustomed to that new dynamic because it's strange when you are family and have that dynamic of being three of you and the hierarchy, or the ever shifting hierarchy, and then
glad you said that, not me.
And then going into work together where that dynamic carries through, but then there's also work dynamic, and we've got used to it being three for a really long time. And then, in terms of writing and it just being us two, it was really, really fun and interesting. And it felt like, it felt kind of refreshingly new, not scary new.
I think we
tried to let it not be a scary thing and really embrace the change.
Did you find, in terms of your songwriting partnership, did it strengthen that, and has it actually strengthened your friendship as sisters, your sibling relationship?
It has, definitely.
Mm,
because your songs have always had a beautiful honesty to them, the subject matter. I feel like they're records that look you in the eye as they're speaking to you. You know, they are much beloved for their honesty, I suppose, as well. And that's doing that stuff between two mates that met in a pub and now make records together is different, clearly, to when you're sisters, and you've obviously got a lot of shared ground emotionally that you are perhaps writing songs about.
Yeah, I think it helps with a sort of, there's an understood language there, or whatever the way of describing it would be, where we often get what each other is saying without having to really explain it.
Mm.
But, you know, we've had to learn to be a band, learn to work together professionally over the years, and sort of try and unlearn being a family at the same time much as you can.
Whereas usually it's kind of the other way around, isn't it? You become a band and you have to kind of learn to be a family and have it be this unbreakable.
Yeah, it's a wonderful way to put it. Mm. Right? It's a funny one. It's a really funny one. Because you obviously, you're going to each other's houses. You're WhatsApping each other all the time. You are having Sunday lunches and wonderful times, and probably slightly scratchy times, as we all do with our families. So, to then have to kind of go, right, tomorrow's Monday, we're recording a song.
It's
okay, bury it.
But I think it has brought us closer together. And we spent the year leading up to making this record basically locked away in a studio in Hackney, just sort of with an acoustic guitar, basically, starting to write songs and just trying to figure out what this next chapter was going to look like and feel like. And we kept saying, we just want to be bold and we don't want to be too cautious about anything. And I think that kind of thesis statement has sort of carried through the making of this record. And we kept returning to it if we were in doubt about anything. Is this actually going to work? Is this cool? Is this too much? No. Just be bold. That's what we said we were going to do.
And be decisive.
Yeah. Mm. And I think working with John Congleton again on the record was so helpful in that way, because John does make really bold sonic choices that we're huge fans of. Sometimes the way a song pans out, it takes you by surprise because you didn't think that it would end up being that kind of song. And again, it was always just like, I think this is the boldness that we were looking for, and this is correct. We're on the right path.
And the challenge to make yourself not constantly second guess, because we can be such ummers and ahs about things of like, oh my God, I have to go away and think about it for 3 weeks.
But this record's got such a, as I said, I wanted to tear it up at the beginning because this sounds like a classic that's been discovered. I mean, in a good way, rather than a record that's come out in 2024. I don't mean that it's a retro thing or anything like that, but it does not sound like you've ummed and ahed about this. It's full of bangers. It's great. And
great.
I'll Never Leave You Alone is, again, one of your classic, look you in the eyes, beautiful songs.
Oh,
thank you.
That's great to hear.
And I say but, I don't mean but I'm going to.
But
on the other hand, so what about John Congleton, who listeners will know from working with you on your last record, has worked for a long time with St. Vincent, Angel Olsen, Sharon Van Etten.
Mm-hmm.
So, and these are, again, aren't Amanari records. He's a very good drums guy, right?
Oh, yeah.
And he's got a lot of that forward-leaning kind of energy to his records. Is that something that he's harnessed in you or that you took from him? Or because now you're not working with Emily and you're working with your producer again, you suddenly are a threesome again, aren't you?
Yeah,
so how does, as we say, you, Millie, said the shifting hierarchies. Yeah, beware, it's a minefield. What about bringing John in and how did that relationship work?
Well,
again,
I it
suppose.
Was yeah, kind of rework.
Yeah.
Well, the first time we worked with him, it was kind of a completely different animal to this one because on our last album, Good Woman, we had kind of been working on it for a really long time and had set out to self-produce. So I'd done a lot of very almost finished demos and working on things and coming up with loads and loads of production bits and bobs. So he had the kind of tricky job of coming in and finishing something that we'd already started.
Turning it into a, from an acoustic confessional album to a rave band. I'm joking. People will know what that record sounds like.
Turning it from a sow's ear into a silk purse.
Into a silk purse. No.
Is this one of your motivational phrases in the studio?
Actually, I think I heard that one from Maggie Smith, says it in Sister Act.
Right.
To Whoopi Goldberg.
I got
if anyone's interested.
Immediately. Yeah, it's one of the Easter eggs in this podcast.
and the Matryoshka that we've created.
There'll be a lot of Sister Act references popping in. So
okay.
Yeah, strap yourself in. but yeah, with that one, with that previous record, he really helped us galvanise ourselves and finish it and be decisive and be bold. But I think that he had always had this itch where he really wanted to, from start to finish, just make something rather than stepping in on someone else's already started
it's
thing.
A tough one, isn't it? It's a subtle thing. You have to be diplomatic. You have to really get what that person was trying to do in the first place,
exactly.
What you guys were trying to do in the first place.
So we got to start from scratch with John on this record, which again ties into that new beginning thing. It was a chance to have a sort of fresh start, even though it was some of the same people.
And he's so decisive and works scarily quickly, which can be quite disarming at first. Very disarming. But once you give into it, it's just like, oh no, all your ideas and your decision making is great. And he doesn't have an ego.
Yeah, I think it's trusting John and trusting the people that have been carefully chosen to be in that room and ultimately trusting in the process that this is going to work. Because decisions are being made quickly, it doesn't mean they're the wrong decisions or bad decisions.
And there's a lot of power in just committing to a decision on the spot, which is what we did with this album. We were like, we're not going to overthink anything.
Yeah.
We did about three songs per day, recording it, didn't do any pre-production, just went in, decided in the moment, this is going to be this is going to be that.
Hadn't
and then
finished lyrics
it.
For some of them,
Hadn't
so we were
lyrics.
Just sort of putting them down as we went, and we're like, I think this is it.
Basically, it sounds like it's half inspired by Sister Act.
It's a very
Lots
strong
of,
theme.
Like, hang on, I'm going to listen to some of the... I'm going to get the transcript of that film, and if there's too much leaning on... There's going to be trouble.
Yeah.
Legal trouble.
Yeah, going to have to call the old lawyer again.
Yeah.
Well, we were saying about if this is the second iteration of us as the Staves, currently minus Emily, then we are Sister Act 2.
Back in the habit.
Okay. Back in the habit. So, yeah. There's a lot of mileage there.
I like this. I think it's good. We're going to go with it. So it's an exciting time for you. When does it become a recognisable and realisable bit of kind of musical currency for you, I wonder?
I think that when the recording was done and we'd sort of signed off on it, obviously that's sort of stage one and it becomes a real thing. And then I think it is when it starts being sort of referred to by the wider team and the label. And I think everyone responded to that song straight away out of all of the new songs on the record, To All Now. But yeah, I think the final masters of the record obviously is This Is Real Now, but you're still kind of in a vacuum until people have really started listening to it. And
I think playing live is a massive part of that.
Yeah, that's going to be my
That's phase two of like, how do we do this in a room with a live audience? Because that's obviously a completely different experience of listening to music than it is on your headphones, on the bus or whatever. So, yeah, I think the good thing about it is it's still continuing to become more and more real.
Yeah.
Even though it was real a year ago, it's becoming more real
every day. I think it's becoming more real. It's getting real. I think being able to play it live in front of people, for me at least, I think that everything feels a bit theoretical until that starts to happen, until there's that kind of weird exchange of energy that you have when you're in a room with people and you're singing at them and they're reacting to it.
Yeah, you can see by the look on their faces, yeah, all that, the raptness of their attention. You've got your call and response festival crowd pleaser. Yeah. And I'll never leave you alone.
Yeah,
exactly. As discussed, right?
Exactly.
We'll be down the front. We'll be down the front. Culture, Monocle and Culture good. Team will be down the front with lyric sheets.
You better be.
Yeah.
People won't need the lyric sheets, but they'll be down there humming. We'll have, yeah.
Sheets just saying applause on them that you can hold up to people.
We have them on this show for, yeah, we have them. It's wonderful stuff. And what about touring? Where does that happen this year? I mean, you are much beloved on the stage as well. Where digs you the most?
Ooh. Oh, that's a good question. I think that there's always a great response from American audiences and Canadian audiences, North American audiences, I should say. But I think partly because they're a bit more forthcoming in their, their sort of cultural tone. They're just a lot more expressive. Mm. There's so much energy in those audiences when you play. So I can't wait to go back in April and do that tour.
Nice.
But you know, UK is home and our home crowd are just amazing and they've been with us since the beginning. And Ireland,
and I was actually gonna say,
we're getting to finally go back and do some European countries because it's been years and years, a combination of life happening plus COVID making the last 3 years just impossible to get back anywhere. So it's like finally we've actually got 2 months and then all the summer festivals of actually touring, leaving the country.
The glamour.
Playing to real humans.
Yeah.
I just...
Madam, is that a guitar in your suitcase?
Yeah.
Yes, I'm on... Yeah, it's good. It's great.
Yeah, it is great. And I think particularly from missing that, because of everything globally that's happened the last few years, we haven't had a chance to road test any new songs because sometimes you get to... You can tour a new song for like a year before you go and record it. And that's actually a really good way of lining up a record.
Yeah.
But we obviously have not done that on this record. The complete opposite way. So now it's figuring out how we're going to play each song, what needs to change, what's not possible to recreate, what is.
Yeah.
So
you've been too decisive. You've got, God, we've finished the record already. Now we've got to go. Yeah. It's the other way around.
Yeah. Exactly. Not ready. Yeah. And I still haven't figured out what the right or the wrong way to do it is. We've kind of done it both ways before, but here we are in this situation, and I think it will be I think it's just going to be really, really exciting to kind of bring it all together.
It's a wonderful record to play in sequence. It makes such sense together. You've got your kind of horizon chasing proper American FM rock kind of propulsive tracks. No, I mean I love that stuff. It sounds great.
Thanks.
And then the sort of pastoral, I thought you were very beautiful. We kind of reminded of Vashti Bunyan with your slightly lovely, beautiful nature of I'll Never Leave You Alone.
Oh, nice.
Thank you.
It's lovely stuff. It's a terrible thing to tell wonderful artists what they sound like in front of them. But anyway, that always brings a tear to my eye.
Yeah.
It's wonderful to have you on the programme. The Staves are brilliant. Thank you for talking us through all now.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
And that is all for this week. My thanks to The Staves, Jessica and Camilla. The new album, All Now, is out now via Communion Records. Monocle on Culture is produced by Sophie Monaghan-Coombs and Steph Jungu, and a special thanks to Lily Austin for editing today's show. We'll be back at the same time next week, but until then, here's The Staves with I'll Never Leave You Alone.
Spider inside, you're trying to keep you off the straight and narrow. Pick me up, put me down, let me dangle. I'm a carrot on a string, I'm a sword as it hangs above you. Oh, oh, oh. I'm the cure, the solution. I'm the reality and the illusion. I'm a kid, I'm a friend, I'm a teacher. I'm the object in the distance, but you'll never reach her. Oh, oh, oh. backseat driver in a storm. I'm the cord, I'm the bell that keeps ringing. The stone in your shoe, I'm the bird your cat keeps bringing home. Oh.
Push me.